Today is March 9th, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Marge Conger, a retired postal employee whose career spanned nearly two decades, times of great change within the system and certainly within the town itself. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in Mrs. Conger's home in Fairbanks. In our mobile society, we don't always plan to stay indefinitely in our new communities. I know I certainly didn't when I came. How did you happen to move to Fairbanks in 1952, and did you think you'd be here 42 years later?
No, this has been a long 40 years. I joined my husband, who had worked up here a year, and he came to San Francisco, our home at that time, and so he thought that I and my son should come up for the summer. And so we came up in April, and 1952. And so he even bought a trailer for us to go home at the end of the, you know, at the end
in
of
the
3 months, yeah. And at the end of 3 months, he said, while you're up here, you might as well stay a winter. So here I am, 42 years later.
Oh, well,
that was a long 3 months, believe me.
Was it a rainy summer, or was it one?
No, it was beautiful. The summer was beautiful. And our little boy, Floyd, was 2 years old at the time, see. And he enjoyed it. He just loved it. You know, and he got acquainted with the two good children, you know. And they were very, very good with children. And they would have cats in their house, you know, and he just loved it. He loved every minute of it.
Oh, especially when it didn't get dark at
night. And that was another thing. It didn't get dark at night, like you said. And so he said, well, Mama, I don't have to go to bed yet because it isn't dark.
I can remember. I had a two-year-old when I first came up. Let's back up a little bit. What was your trip like coming up here? Did you come by boat?
No, we came by airplane. And we also brought our dog with us. And I had to get a dog kennel, of course, in those times. And the dog howled. You know, we could hear him. It was an old Pan Am and plane. And we landed at Weeks Field. And we could, in Seattle, why, of course, Floyd wanted to see his dog, Trixie, but they said we couldn't see the dog. And then when we got here, why, of course, the dog
found its way up.
But we could hear the dog in the plane above the noise. Yeah.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They certainly keep them separated now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Well, at that time, though, they had a lot of cargo was up in the front of the plane.
Oh, between the pilot and the passengers.
Mm-hmm. At that time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you said you arrived in April. That would have been during breakup?
Yes, yes. And coming from San Francisco, I had toeless shoes on and heelless. And so my husband, I think that we arrived here in the late afternoon. And so he said, well, we'll go over to so and such a place. And I believe it was the Northern at that time. It was on First Avenue. And it was near the Pioneer Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't Francis Doyle's place, but it was in between there, in that vicinity. And so the waitress said, well, you must be a Chechaqua. And after she had taken our order and left, I said to my husband, well, I said, that wasn't very smart of her to say that to me. And I said, I wonder how come she knew. And when she came back, why, my husband, he, of course, knew the word Chechaqua, what it meant in that. And he said to her, well, my wife wonders how you knew that she was a Chechaqua. And she looked down at my feet and she said, well, because of the shoe she wore. And at that time, Cushman Street was the only one. And my feet were muddy.
So the streets were not paved at that
no,
time?
No, they weren't. Just Cushman Street was paved.
What about sidewalks? Did you have concrete sidewalks?
No, I don't believe so. I think the ones on First Avenue were bored at that time.
Oh, old plank sidewalks.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get your heels caught in the cracks if you're not careful.
Oh, dear.
Well, did your husband have a house picked out for you? Or?
Yes, and that was another thing. He drove the car up in front of the house, and he said, "This is it." Well, it had tar paper on it. It was black, you know. And I thought, I thought to myself, oh, no. But when I went inside, he had been busy working on it. It wasn't too bad, really. In those days, you know, we had a living room, which was large, and a bedroom. And he had made the closet at the end of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And we had a kitchen and a bathroom that wasn't completed, though. The bathroom wasn't. But he says, well, what do you think of your new home? And I looked it over and I said, well, the outside isn't so good looking, but the inside, I can live with it, you know. And he says, and I said, well, of course, for 3 months you can put up with anything.
Now, this was a rented house.
Yeah, it was rented. And our landlords lived right next door to us, mm-hmm. Frank and Irene.
Oh, where was this, on Front Street?
Front Street, 102 Front.
Well, that's not far from here.
No, no, it isn't.
It's funny how people end up in their same neighborhoods many
years
later.
Yeah, it is true. And so Fred Bruner was our first mailman.
So you had a little mailbox right out in front?
Front, yeah. We could go get it and our mail, you know.
Do you remember what the cost of the rent would have been in those days, in utilities?
Well, we paid our light bill, but we didn't pay our oil bill because some way or other it was run from the landlord. They only had one tank and mm-hmm. we shared it with them or something like that.
Yeah, so that
but
was
Our rent, I think, was $35 a month. I think that was
that probably
good.
Seemed like a lot.
Well, yeah, it was, but it wasn't too much considering the winters were so long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the fuel oil, just think of what it would cost to heat that. Well, of course, in those days it wouldn't either cost that much.
Yeah, it's all relative.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And the houses were smaller, too.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't remember how much is fuel, but I know that our electricity, we paid for that.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of your neighbors?
They were neighbors of ours, and they were very good with children. I mean, Ron and Dorothy, too good, you know, and they were very good with children because they took the time to explain everything to them, you know. And Frank and Irene were our landlord and landlady, and their name was Dennison. And then they had, who used to babysit Floyd, they had a daughter, and her name was Winnie Dennison. And at that time, she was about, I'd say about 13 or 14 years old. And then at the other, they had another rental, but the people come and go, so I didn't get to know them too well.
So when did your husband say you're staying for the winter?
Well, he said, while you're up here, you might as well stay for the winter. And I thought, oh. And which, you know, the winters were long. And so I thought, well, gee, I've worked in an office down in San Francisco, you know. And I thought, oh, I just can't imagine being cooped up all winter. So I went to work for Francis Doyle. And I would go to work at midnight and work at 8 in the morning, so my son would be sleeping that time, so we wouldn't have to.
So you're home with him.
Yeah.
Now, what type of a store was that?
That was the liquor store, the Garden Arm Party Stores. And I was then I worked there for a while, and then I got to be manager of it. At $1.70 an hour.
I was going to say, what was your wage?
Yeah, $1.70. An hour, yeah.
And that would be Mondays through Fridays that you would work?
I would get different days on it, dependent upon when the days of holidays come, because they, and you'd get fabulous tips, you
on
know.
On holidays?
Oh, fabulous tips. I know I'd get tips of $20 or more, and the guys would leave you, say, $500 or $700 with you. And I'd say, well, let me give you a receipt. And they said, well, if I didn't trust you, I wouldn't leave it with you.
Oh, so you were like a bank.
Yeah.
Holiday Bank.
Oh, gosh. I mean, well, they were getting all the time they could, you know, and they were making money hand over fist. And I don't know, I guess they just thought they'd leave it. And I often thought, well, they would have, it would be their word against mine whether they'd given me the $700. They would have no proof of it. But I did offer to give them a receipt, you know, and sign it and everything. But they said, well, no, if we didn't trust you, we wouldn't have given it to you. So.
One of the nice things about a small town then, I guess it was about 5,000 people.
People then, well, Garden Island, at that time, it wasn't as heavily populated as it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a lot of homes that weren't built at that time. And then when I worked there for Francis Doyle, why, I was held up.
Oh.
And the guy, he lived just two blocks over at that time. And so he said, I thought, well, gee, when he ordered a six-pack of beer, see, and I didn't have an opener, see. And so I went in the other room to get an opener, and I come back, something fell down in his sleeve and hit the counter. And I said, what do you have up your sleeve? And he said, what are you afraid of? I'm going to hit you over the head? And I said, no. And at that time, I grabbed a fifth of liquor. And I said, no, if there's any hitting to be done here, I'll do the hitting. And I don't know where I got my strength from.
And this was probably at 2 in the morning or so?
2 or 3 in the morning. And then he went to that little store. They had a little store in Slaterville. And he held up the woman and he killed her. He hit her in the back of the head.
Oh, dear. So how did you drive him off then?
He got scared. He knew that I knew that he had something. So the
so
minute.
He had a gun.
So, yeah, well, no, a tire.
Oh,
a tire tool. That you change the tires with that lug wrench, you know? And so as soon as he left, I called the police then. And I told them, and so they had gone to the store, how was that? It's quite a while ago. They came to the store and asked me about him, and I told him what he looked like and where I thought he lived. And so they left, and then they came back, and he said, they told me that he had killed the other lady, the little old lady.
Oh, yeah.
When she
this was after he visited you.
And when she went over to get some luncheon meat, he hit her in the head with the
wrench. That wrench that you saw.
So I had to go to Juneau for the trial because they didn't think, and he turned out to be a soldier.
Mm-hmm. So the trial was moved to Juneau because it was a military.
Well, because they thought that he wouldn't get a fair trial here.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because he was quite well known. And I'll never forget, the police called my home and said, we'll bring him over for you to identify, you know. And I hung it up, and my husband had a fit because he said, they're not going to bring him to your home, because at that time we had moved, you know, we bought our home. And he said, they're not going to bring him out here, you know. And he was just getting ready, and the phone rang again. And it was them and said, no, you come down here. And we'll be out to pick you up, to identify him.
So then you gave the positive identification.
Patient, yeah.
And then how much later was the trial?
Oh, a long time later.
After. So you had to go down for a couple of weeks?
Juneau, yeah.
But you felt differently working in the store
no,
after that. Did they take any precautionary measures after that?
Well, no, not really. Not in those days, you know. But the funniest part about it was I had no gun, no way to protect myself, but I grabbed a fifth of whiskey of some kind.
That sounded like a good weapon of choice.
Yeah.
So how much longer did you work?
Well, I didn't work there too long because I was jittery. Everyone,
I think that would change your attitude about that type of work.
And the first place, I answered an ad. I think Francis put an ad in the paper, and I answered it. And I wasn't too familiar with being around liquor and health. And I wasn't too fond. I had never been around liquor before, and I wasn't, you know. But in those days, can you imagine, they sold a six-pack for $1.50. I remember that so well. And now...
Yeah, it's more like, I don't know, $5 or $6 at least.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah.
So she... Are you... looked elsewhere for a job after.
Yeah, and so I went to Monty's department store. I got a job there, and so I worked in the ladies' ready-to-wear, but I wasn't too happy there, and so I took the civil service test. They just had given them then for the post office. They had just started, and Maud Boyle had just left, and Helen Bell was the new postmaster, and she's the one that hired me at the post office.
So this, what year would
this
be?
This would be in 19...
58,
yeah, I think. And it was in February, because I know it was in the middle of the winter.
So you'd worked at Monty's all that time up until the post office.
Yeah.
I guess when you were working at Monty's, you had some fires that were fairly close by.
Close, yeah. The Pioneer Hotel burned. I remember that. And that was really a big fire. That, you know, because the town was small then.
And most of the buildings were wooden.
Mm-hmm. And they went, and that was a big fire. And I remember the old Bailey Bridge. You know, it wasn't concrete like it is now. Mm-hmm. The old Bailey Bridge.
Upstream a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember. And let's see, what other fire did they have?
You see, there was one you mentioned in the Lathrop building. Or was that before you came?
No, the Nordale Hotel. That was another big fire. Remember when... Eva McGowan.
Oh, yeah, that was quite a bit later.
Later, yeah. That, but I remember the Pioneer Fire. I remember that because we went down to watch that.
Yeah, I guess it would attract everybody.
But yeah, because, you know, and there were a lot of people there, too. My husband knew several of the guys that had rooms there. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to see that they were okay, too.
Did people get out of that?
Yeah.
Because I guess being in the summertime, it was easier.
Well, yeah, that's true. And it was the type of fire, too, that it was. You know, it just didn't...
So you started working at the post office after you took the exam. Was that located in the old federal building?
Yes, it was.
And I guess that was the original...
Original post office. And when I first went there, I was boxing mail for Bill Olicane. And remember, he was superintendent of mail at that time?
Well, I guess that was before I came.
Old Bill, he was quite a character. He was a Finlander. And you could tell it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I shouldn't tell this on the...
See, 1958, that was about the time of statehood. Did you...
That was the time of statehood. And I remember that Ralph Rivers was one of them. There were about four or five people that went and were for statehood, you know. Mm-hmm. They had to go to Washington, D.C., and this was quite a bit. And a lot of people didn't think that that we'd be better off being a state. You know, there were a lot of people that weren't
from. It was pretty much split right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it was. So there were a lot of people that worked for statehood. But I, of course, was, you know, I thought that this should be a state and all that. But anyhow, it is funny, though, how people in the lower states, I have a friend that worked with me at the Circus Food Company, and she said, how many rooms does your igloo have, Marge?
Yeah, a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah. And especially in those days, you know, and because they didn't have television like we do now. And of course, you'd think, I said to my husband, I said, well, you think that she hadn't gone to school. I know that she had, you know. And she was well educated, but to ride up here and ask me how many rooms there were in my igloo. Yeah, so.
Well, you were showing me this booklet earlier on reflections on statehood. Do you remember the special stamp that came out? Was there a ceremony held?
Yes, the stamp was a caribou that came out.
And I wonder how much that cost. Probably.
Well, I remember that when I started at the bottom, I worked my way up, and when I was selling stamps, an airmail stamp was 7 cents. Airmail.
And this is in about 1959.
Well, yeah, 59, yeah, 50. Or 60, yeah. And 7 cents for airmail. And before, the mail used to come up by train, and then they trucked it up, you know. Mm-hmm. And from Seattle to Fairbanks, I think that it was 47 or 48 hours that it took for the truck to drive.
So that would be considered
They would drive, the first class only. Mm-hmm. Then that's when the airmail came out. They flew it all out, see.
Oh, so until then.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that the mail came first by railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was there a
truck?
A single car? I thought it was a Brill car or something that brought mail from.
Well, it was a big truck, a big van truck that I know that I remember the guys opening the big doors in the back, you know, and they'd just have sacks of mail. You know.
So that would come from the railroad depot?
No, that was with the trucks.
Coming up the highway?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would have been considered surface mail.
Surface, first class.
First class, which would have been a couple of cents cheaper, I guess, than the air mail.
And then they would bring third class, but of course you always work the first class first, never the third class, you know, might get shoved back for a while.
Do you remember, so we always remember our starting salaries. Do you remember what you got when you first started working at the post office?
Well, I got $1.85 an hour. And at that time, you had to work a year before you got on as regular meant that you'd be assured of 40 hours a week. But I always worked 40 hours a week anyhow from this time
in
I started.
The beginning.
But you had to work there a year. Now, I think that they get 11 something an hour, you know, dollars, that is.
Yeah, and more.
Yeah. Plus, you sometimes wonder whether they. I know that I went out there several times, and women would come from the States, you know, to visit, and I'd take them out to see the new post office and that. And they'd say, "But all these offices, Marge, what are they for?" Well, you know, at the federal building. We had the postmaster had their office, and then we had another little office there, receptionist. Then the third office, there was the claims department. And so they said, "Marge, what are all these offices for?" And I said, "Well, you'll notice on each one it's got safety department." And I said, "Boy," I said, those were the days that we should work now instead of then, because then they were all thrown together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had claims and I did reception work and all that together. Now they have for each department. They do have, and they each have an office, you know. Mm-hmm. So times
have changed. I guess in the federal building, the post office is on the main floor.
Floor, yeah.
And then the courthouse was up above.
Yeah, that's true. And then downstairs we had our lunchroom. And it had our locker rooms in it, you know. And we had a big table, and then we'd always go down to eat our lunch. Yeah, it was. And then the ladies' restroom was downstairs, too.
Mm-hmm. So Jack Tripp, I guess, was postmaster when...
Jack Tripp was, Helen Bell was the postmaster when I started.
Oh, that's right. Okay, mm-hmm. 1958.
Yeah. And Jack Tripp was, during the flood, I remember, he came, I think, in 1960. Mm-hmm. I believe Tripp came in 1950 because I know that when the flood came, I would go to work every day, but I'd go up to the university, and we'll have to go to the stock truck, because they put us all in the back end of the truck, and, you know, it was high. And we'd go over to the airport then. We were at the airport and work. The trucks couldn't go, the carriers, of course, couldn't go on their routes. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, there was work to be done, and people would come there and say, well, how's so-and-so, you know, we were checking on them. Are they getting any mail, or do they have... And they would also come out there to pick up the mail. Mm-hmm. And so we had enough to do, and
during the entire time you were mm-hmm. on the job.
Yeah. And at that time, I was the head of the vehicle department. And so I had all the trucks to see that they were... None of them could go out because, as you know, the streets were all flooded, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they were all in the garage. But I had to see that each one of the trucks was, you know, accounted for and stuff like that.
Well, did any of them get flood damage?
No. Well, a couple of them did that... were out on the route, you know. It came, I think, August the 19th, 1967, I think is when the flood. And guys that were out on special delivery and that, why their trucks were stalled. And so Chester had to go and see that they were brought in.
And who was Chester?
Well, he was my assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And... Yeah, I remember one thing was my assistant who fell asleep, and he was sitting on the waste paper basket, and I looked up and I see him here sitting there with his eyes closed, and so I said, "Mr. Carnegie, what's wrong with Chester?" And he said, he of course knew how he would do that. It was some kind of a sickness he had. He'd just sit down any place and
go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but I really enjoyed him because he would... One thing I remember was Chester said one day, well, my brother-in-law passed. You know, this was on a Monday morning. I said, he passed? I said, what kind of a test did he take? And he said, no, I mean that he died.
Oh.
And he was, you know, I mean, I just wasn't used to
that.
The terminology. Yeah. And so he was a great guy, though.
Sounds like you had a lot of
people
to work with.
I really did, you know. And Faison and I were always going to write a book about our days at the post office because we had a lot of romancing and stuff like that, you know, and we were going to write this book because we thought it would be funny, and it probably would have been, but she since has passed away.
So. Oh. I mean, you saw a lot of love. What do you mean by romance? People?
Well, for instance, the superintendent of mail, this is when we was in the federal building years ago, he said, so-and-so isn't to work this morning. Wake him up. And then while you're up there in the room, tell him to wake up Betty, because, you know, he knew that.
Oh.
And, of course, we knew all this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
no
and then
secret in the post office.
Yeah, no secret, you know. I mean, yeah, that was really something. And I'm going out in March to see a friend that used to work with me. And I know that we'll go through because she too knew a lot of the romances that transpired there. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, one poor lady was going to, I'll never forget, we had this apartment house, you know. And so they were tenants of ours. And I, of course, knew that her husband was running around. And she was going to go to the river and commit suicide. And I spent about 2 hours, you know, telling her, you know, wasn't worth it or anything. But no man was worth that, and she had two girls and stuff like that. So I did get her talked out and got her back. But, we had a lot.
You really become a good reader of
people
by working in the post office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
See a lot of problems, and sounds like you helped solve a few, too.
Oh, dear.
What about the customer that gets locked out of a mailbox?
Yes, Eva McGowan. Oh, my glory. You know, poor Eva, she'd come in the post office there, and the first couple of times she'd just go through her purse, you know, and her keys would be at the bottom. So after that, a few times she'd done that for me, and I watched her. I knew that she'd never find her keys, so she'd come up there, and she'd say, "Dearie, would you open 683 for me? I can't find my keys," you know. And so after that, I said, whenever she came in, I'd say, well, open 683 because she's not going to find her keys. And I'd just tell her, well, your box is open. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just let her know that. Oh, and she was something else again. She loved her hats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember
that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she was quite a gal, Eva was. Yeah. And then another thing that I was thinking of was Phil. And he'd had a big stick, and every morning about 9 o'clock he'd come, "Well, I've got to wake up my boys now." And it seemed like the people would come in there to sleep. That's when they used to leave the post office all night, you know. And so it was warm in there, and they'd come and sleep on the steps. And so every morning he would go and hit him on the bottom of the feet. I didn't know that. He said that that'll wake, you know. He said, "That'll wake up the dead." He told me. Yeah. And I guess it worked, too, because every morning that was his ritual, Lois.
So out before the customers would come.
But any more now, then after that, before I left the federal station, they began locking at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they used to keep it open all night and
I guess that was before they had shelters.
And sure, and they had to be someplace, and this was a good warm place to be. So he would come every morning and say, "Well, I guess I better wake up my boys."
Now, Phil was,
he was a janitor.
Janitor,
mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
So he just had that as an added job.
Yeah, because he said, "Well, I guess I'll have to go wake up my boys." And so that was the way he did it, was.
Well, looking at your scrapbook, I see there are many other aspects of your life. I see that you are a boating enthusiast, or your husband certainly was.
Yes. And Oscar Queen had a construction company here, and they went to Hawaii for 4 or 5 years. They had they built a state building there. And so Jack wanted to buy his place up the Salter River, his cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And Oscar said, "I don't know what you want to buy it for, Jack. You can use it all the time I'm gone," so which we did. And then when he came back, we gave it back to him. But in the meantime, a bear got in the cabin, and that was the dirtiest mess that cleaned up that cabin you ever saw.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's a hazard with remote cabins.
Yeah, so that, but we did spend a lot of time. Every Thursday night I'd get the boat packed up. And Friday night, right after work, we'd head up to Chena, up the Salcher, rather.
Mm-hmm. Drive out to the Salcher.
Yeah,
and, then...
Put our boat in and away we'd go.
And that was an airboat?
Airboat, yeah. Jack was a fiend for airboats because at one time he'd flown, and then when he lost his eye in South Dakota, why, they wouldn't give him a license, of course. And he was very fond of airboats. So he built the first airboat, and then Evans Hawk was interested in airboats too. So
yeah, there's quite a few of them.
Now there's quite a few of them. Yeah, there. But the thing is, you don't need deep water with them. They'll just skim on the top, see, and you don't need deep water with them. And I remember one time we had gone up the river, and the carburetor. We had trouble with it, and it wasn't getting any gas, so it just stalled out. So Jack said, I don't know what we're going to do. So he went and threw the rope, and fortunately it hit a tree and went around the tree, the rope did. And that's the only thing that stopped us, because it was in the spring of the year, and we'd have both gone down with the boat because there wasn't any way you could stop the airboat. And I know that when we came home that night, we was telling our son about it. And he said, you know, Mom, he said, you two are just going to kill yourself. You won't be happy. We were having fun, though. We enjoyed it.
So that would have been in the early 60s?
60s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the... But we did have a lot of fun with that old boat.
So while you were working at the post office, what business was your husband in at that point?
Well, he was running work then at that time for Pete Grossko from Portland, Oregon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then later years, why, he didn't ever want to be a business agent, but he said, well, the guys want me to be. What do you think of it, Marge? And I was the one really that helped him decide to become the business agent. Yeah.
And this is for the Painters
Union? Painters Union, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he would rather be a boss and boss people, but the office thing he just didn't like that.
He liked to be out.
Yeah. And so he had a good girl though, Betty Gerald. Do you know her?
No, I don't.
Yeah. Well, she's an old timer here, and he got her to be his bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. So he did all right, and then he was, at the time he was, he retired too. He was elected again for another 3 years, but he never served him out because he
retired.
Yeah, he retired. Yeah, so we decided that we would, we had bought this motor home, and we decided that we'd just take it easy and go to the States and look for a place to retire in. But we were out 7 months, and we came back in May, and there was one place that Jack liked at Shell Knob, Missouri, and he had a friend that lived there, and he liked fishing too, but I decided that I would never be happy there, and Shell Knob was a little town, and the women, you know, just were all the kind that had been farmers' wives and they'd been home all their lives. So I thought, no, I won't be happy here. So I said next morning to Jack, well, I think we should leave tomorrow.
For Alaska.
And you? So we came back to Alaska. And Mr. Barnett is still living. He's 94. But the guy that... just about had Jack talked into
retiring
down there, but no, I couldn't see Shell Knob at all.
Oh, well, let's back up a little bit to the latter part of your career with the post office. We were talking about the flood and some of the the fact that it was business as usual in terms of keeping the mail sorted all during the flood and taking care of the trucks. Did you have any wet mail?
We managed to keep it dry. Of course, the planes didn't, we weren't getting as much. But as far as the mail goes, I would say that probably there wasn't any more loss during the flood than there was during ordinary times from letters being torn open by machines or something mm-hmm. like that.
You know? Boy, that's amazing.
Yeah. Because they'll chew them up. Yeah, they will, you know. But as far as the mail getting wet, we were very good about keeping the mail all dry. Mm-hmm. We really were.
I guess at that time there was the airport annex too.
That
you were working out.
Yes. Uh huh. After we got the trucks, we had to move. They built the annex, and we moved out there. And for a time, we rented a building from the Frontier Flying Company. I think they had a big garage there. Then later on, we built our own garage for the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was during the time that Tripp was there. Yeah. Because he was the one that thought that would be a good job for me to handle all the trucks mm-hmm. and make out all the work orders and
You must have thought you knew a lot about trucks.
Well, I didn't really, though. You know, but Chester did. I was just to see that it got done.
It got done.
Mm-hmm. And for each truck that had to be worked on, I had to make a work order. See? Mm-hmm. And Jean's, then they would put a contract out. And Jean's, I know, had it at the time that I was the vehicle maintenance assistant. Jeans had it at that time. So any time a truck needed something done to it, we'd take it to Jeans.
Jeans Auto.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chester would.
Man, it slipped on the wastebasket.
Yeah, that's the guy.
But he knew his trucks.
Trucks.
So he would troubleshoot them and kind of have an idea.
And say that a screw come out of a handle on a truck, why Chester would put a new screw in.
So for some of the minor repairs.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But say the oil had to be changed or a new filter or something, why we always took it to Jean's mm-hmm. to do that.
So you worked for about 20 years then for the post office?
Yeah. And then in 1974, at that time, though, I was, by that time, I had gotten back to claims and inquiries, and any time the telephone rang at the post office, why, Marge had to answer it, and, some of those people were so mad, you know, where's my check, you know, the Social Security check, and, it's supposed to be in here. What happened to it? Did you put it in the wrong box? And, you know, I had to be real sweet. And
diplomacy.
Yeah. I had to use a lot of that, too. And that was my job in those days. And then just before I quit, I retired, I was Jeanette personnel assistant, Jeanette Walker's personnel.
So working in claims then was the last place you were?
Personnel assistance was.
I see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And in 1974 was when I was answering the telephone and you want to turn that thing.
Okay, I guess in the claims department that means service, but I guess it also means having some customers that are a little difficult to deal with.
Yes, one in particular I remember was a guy that worked up the university, and he had ordered some bread from San Francisco. And evidently, I don't know how it happened, but evidently he hadn't got his first notice on it, because his second notice, they told him to come and pick it up because it was perishable. So he came in, and when he picked it up, it happened to be bread. And then he came in and he wanted to know where the claims inquiry was or something, he could go see. And he came in my office, and he just hammered the desk, just furious. Oh, he said, and I said, well, I'm sorry, sir, but it wasn't insured, so we have no way of compensating you for your bread, you know.
Yeah, it probably wasn't worth that anyway.
Oh, he just really was irate. And after he left, why, the postmaster came in and she said, you don't have to take that kind of stuff from anybody. But I said he was just blowing off his steam. You know, I knew he was mad. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't. I think that maybe, and she said, well, boy, she said, you know, I listen to some of those guys that come in there. And she said, you take a lot more from them than I would. But I mean, you know,
they take it personally.
You know, yeah, no, yeah. And yeah, so they were he was just blown off steam. You know,
and you probably had some customers that thanked you too.
Yeah, there were, I can remember one, and Johnny Albright, who's passed away now, but
oh yeah, Samson's Hardware.
Samson's Hardware, that's right. And he come in, he said, Marge, he said, you guys do. Well, we kind of pampered Johnny. We put all of his things together and added up all his COD. Generally, he had things come COD. Mm-hmm, and would add them all up and just have them all right there. And all he had to do was sign them and pick up the package, and away you go. So we did get thanked. He said, you know, he said that you had the best system here of any he knew of.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
And later on I met his daughter, and she was real sweet. She was from Rockford, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember
Johnny
at the
Samson Hardware, yeah. Yeah.
So you probably knew a lot of the business people.
Yeah, I really, you do get to know a lot of the
favorites.
Well, yeah, sort of.
Sounds like Johnny was one of them.
Yeah, Johnny, poor Johnny, yeah. And he'd always go over to the Mecca bar and have one short one, he'd say. And then he said by that time the post office should be open, so he'd come and pick up his mail every morning. We could, about the first or second customer would be Johnny.
So you'd open up at
9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. So
9 to 6, yeah.
A visit before 9 o'clock at the bar.
Yeah, I said, well, I didn't think that they opened till 10, but I guess he knew Burnett's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he'd always go to the Mecca.
That was on First Avenue?
Second Avenue. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit, you know, about a half a, not even a half a block, a quarter of a block
from the
post office, yeah.
One of the vacant lots now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. What is in there now?
Well, it's between the Lathrop Building and, I guess there is still a bar there.
Yeah, I think there. I haven't been down there for so long. It's kind of hard to see. My sister sent some bananas up here, you know, and so she didn't think that we had any fresh fruit up here. So those bananas, when they got here, you know, she had said, "Did you get my bananas?" And I didn't. Oh, I didn't tell her. When we came up here, my sister sent me some bananas, and she didn't think we had any fresh fruit up here, see? And so she'd, I think she'd send them airmail, but she didn't send them special delivery, you know? So I knew that she, and she wrote me a letter and said, I sent you some bananas today. So when the bananas got here, they were just overripe and just all mess, you
not
know.
Not even good for banana bread.
And so, but I didn't ever tell her until this day. She doesn't know but what those bananas got here in fine shape, because I never told her.
Now, how long would it have taken them to get here?
Oh, Ken, in those days, a couple of weeks.
You know. Probably yellow when she bought them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, an airmail, you'd think that they would get there, but if it wasn't special delivery air, why,
you know. Start on the back seat, literally.
Yeah, right. And so there were a lot of things that...
I bet you saw a lot of strange things come through the post office.
Post office, yeah. You really did, yeah. And I remember Lindy and his big orders sending him out to the bush, you know. Mm-hmm. And, well, I imagine that at that time that Lindy's probably was the only place that was. Well, Piggly Wiggly's did, though, too. They sent out a lot to the bush.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You handled all their mm-hmm. groceries.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was quite interesting, you know. Of course, like any job, why you get tired of the same thing day in and day out, mm-hmm. you know.
But dealing with the public like that, you would have something
different each day, and you would deal with different people, and some of them you'd laugh about, you know, later on.
And did you find that people would recognize you?
Oh, definitely.
The post office lady. They might not know your full name, but
you work at the post office, yeah. And I still find that today that they'll say, "Oh, you used to work at the post office. You'll know," and they'll ask me something, you know. And I know I've said to the present postmaster that I know J.C. Thomas. He was the carrier when I worked there, and I'll say, "When are you going to send me my paycheck?" All these questions I have to answer because they remember me from the post mm-hmm. office, you know.
So a lot of it sounds like there's quite a longevity in the postal system. That you mentioned J.C.
Thomas,
started out early on and is, of course, now
postmaster now. Yeah, yeah.
So it was a good job.
And it was a good job. And in 1964, I think it was, things were really slow. You couldn't have bought another job anywhere in town. And so construction, everything was built. It was going to be built, I think. And we were lucky then to have jobs, really. Mm-hmm.
And once you passed that year, sort of probation, you were pretty well off the system.
Yeah, that's true, too.
You, and it sounded like there was opportunity for advancement and responsibilities, and you could go right up the ladder.
If you prove yourself, yeah, and we're interested in it, mm-hmm. you know.
What aspect did you like best about the post office? If you were to sum up the thing that you really enjoyed the most about one of your jobs, or
I think that probably. I enjoyed the work as assistant personnel because you had people that would come in and they'd say, "Well, how am I on the roster?" You know. Mm-hmm. And during the pipeline, though, maybe one day you'd have it all filled, and the next day they had all gotten jobs on the pipeline or gone down the Union Hall or something, been sent mm-hmm. out, and you wouldn't have any of them show. And maybe the superintendent of mails would call you up and say, "Well, I need such and such. I need three carriers and I need two clerks." And you say, "Why, yesterday it was full." And they said, "Well, it isn't today." And so it was my duty to call them up and see if they were interested. And sometimes you'd go through quite a few before you got one.
So
that
where was this labor pool then at the...
at the labor pool itself was who was ever supervisor of the carriers, you know. Mm-hmm. Say carrier 10 wouldn't show, mm-hmm. and he would call up the house, and maybe his wife would say, "Oh, he's gone to work this morning up at the line for somebody else."
Is, 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah. You know, they didn't mean a thing, those 2 weeks' notice. Didn't mean a thing during the...
So it sounds like that was really a very trying time.
Well, that was, it was trying and yet it was interesting, you know.
Yeah, you certainly came across a lot of different
and,
people.
And now I understand you have to go to Anchorage to take the test, civil service test.
Mm-hmm. So it's not given here at
local.
All anymore?
No.
Was it given every 3 months or...
Well,
for instance, when you took it.
They were just starting to give it at that time, and out to Fort Wainwright. Lydia Barnes used to give them out there. And then you wouldn't only, and this is also what I did, I gave the civil service test too after a while, but you would give them for, say, the FAA, and you'd give them for the radio announcers and foreign diplomats. And yeah, and you'd give them for different people. You know, not only the postal, but you, and maybe those were always scheduled on Saturday, though. And I never liked that, working on Saturday.
So that gave you a 6-day week, or did you take another day off?
Well, no, you could do either one, but generally I'd just say, well.
Usually it'd be a half a day?
Well, yeah, by the time, it would be a half a day by the time.
And they were always given on base at that time?
Well, no, they were given down the basement.
Oh, I see.
In our lunchroom. It's where you get them, because they had a big long table in there and lots of chairs. And
so you were the proctor.
Yeah.
So make sure they finished in due time.
Time, yeah. And like I was a model for this lady that does my hair, and she was so nervous. And I said, don't be nervous, because when you're nervous, you can't think. And I'd try to put everybody at ease before they'd take the test, because some of them you could tell they were so uptight, you know, so they'd get a better grade. Because that's true. When you're nervous, you can't think. And so I'd try to
give them a little pep talk.
Yeah.
So they'd all pass.
Yeah.
Well, when we were looking at your scrapbook, I saw pictures of your retirement party. That was in 76. Oh, you mentioned also 1974, before we get to your retirement party, you received an award.
Yeah, and excellence. And Mrs. Bell and I, we went to San Diego. And, of course, it happened to be my birthday. I received the reward on my birthday. And so I had my picture taken, and Sullivan gave me the award. And I was the one in Alaska that won the award.
That was,
he was, what was he, some big wheel from Seattle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, you retired.
Tired, yeah.
Oh, what kind of a party did they throw for you?
Oh, they really had, and this was quite a surprise, because everybody was there, it seemed like, you know. It, to me, it did, and John Wilson, he retired the same time I did, and John, what was John? But anyhow, he retired, so they just put the two of us together, but I received Jade Clark from the clerks and from the management and that, with the ivory hands on it. And then I, from the union, I received a painting.
Oh, the one over there.
Yeah, the one over there. And so I said to Fred Gwathney, I said, how come you gave me, picked out that saloon, you know? I said, you know, he knew I didn't drink. And he said, Marge, every time you had company from the States, you always took them out there. And I did. So that was the reason why the union gave me the picture of the painting of the Malmute Saloon out to Esther, yeah, but it's changed a lot since that picture was painted,
quite a few years ago.
Yeah, but that's the way, exactly the way it was when I, and when people would come up, I'd take them, always take them out to Malmute Saloon, and so Fred said that. I suggested it. He said, Margie said, it's my fault because I suggested it. And I said, oh, I love the thing, but I just wondered why.
Just wanted to know the reason behind it. So where was the party held? One of the local hotels?
Isn't that something that I can't... I don't remember. Yeah. It was a great party, but I don't remember where it was held. And I was sober, too.
Well, you have lots of pictures of people that attended, so you certainly can remember or have
great
a good
party
photo record of who was there.
I'll have to find out, where it was.
Yeah. Sounds like you had a very interesting time working, certainly at the post office and your other jobs in Fairbanks. And
yeah, Fairbanks, it kind of grows you on. I've got to know a lot of interesting people, you know.
Yeah.
And you go back home on a visit and you tell them about different people, and they said, oh, there must be a bunch of characters that live there. They're not characters, you know.
Just interesting people.
That's right.
And I guess that's why we stay here.
I think that it must be something.
Interesting. Your husband was the one that really wanted to stay, and yet you were the one that wanted to come back. And that's kind of the way it is with
my
husband.
Yeah. And the circus food said, oh, you'll never stay up there, Marge. Well, any time you come back, well, you'll have a job waiting for you. So.
Oh, well, I've enjoyed talking to you this afternoon. Thank you very much.
And yes, and I certainly have enjoyed talking to you.